Morning, team.
Morning.
Morning.
How are we doing?
Like a 6 out of 10.
6 out of 10. Feeling?
Yeah.
Oh, you're looking an 8.
Wow, that's kind.
Jousy, double 6 for you, mate.
You've either got it or you haven't, have you?
That's it, mate. Some of us were born with it.
Yeah, I was at the back of the queue, though.
Yeah. But you've got the brains.
Got the circumference of head that would suggest that I have big brains, yes.
Yeah. Do you know, it was actually nearly in the 40s, so 1940s, before they stopped thinking that. Like, they would measure intelligence by the size of your head.
Imagine if you were born in the 40s.
I'd win everything. I'd have been Prime Minister, size of my head.
You got a teeny head.
Have I got a little head?
Yeah.
You got a pinhead.
Have I?
Peahead.
When I was little, they always called me meathead.
No.
You got a pinhead, mate.
Oh, so then I wouldn't have been Prime Minister.
No, absolutely. Jazzy would have been Prime Minister.
No, you'd have been Malcolm Meatball Head over here. You'd have been
Prime Minister Jouse. Okay.
That'd be a good world.
With you, Prime Minister? Yeah, it'd be great. Well, at least people would know where they stand, eh, mate?
Exactly, there's too much going around the subject, isn't there?
I actually think that's a great... Maybe that should be the next sort of
campaign. Don't want to hurt people's feelings anymore.
Yeah. We could do that, couldn't we? Campaign Jousy for Prime Minister. I'd vote for you,
and
mate.
Me.
You'd get my vote. You'd get 2 votes. Your mum would vote for you.
Would she?
So... fitness, physics, functional continuum, we're talking about.
What on earth do you mean? Come on, Phil.
What is this?
The functional continuum, when did we develop that?
In fairness, you developed that.
Okay.
And when taught that to me.
And me.
Many moons ago. 2007, you introduced that to me, mate.
Yeah. But it was born out of a necessity, really, to explain what we do,
yeah,
how we think, and it's a really good something we've used all along is the continuum there. Of, I think I remember being asked on a seminar, and everybody knows my feelings towards leg extensions. You know, there's very few things where I'll be sort of black and white and say that's just absolute rubbish or bad for you, or this circumstance where I could or couldn't use it. I think leg extension is just one of those ones where I cannot see any circumstance where it could be helpful. But anyway, it was...
Should we go into that a little bit?
Leg extension?
Might. Well, obviously, because we know where you stand on it, but...
And what you mean by it.
You're obviously saying it, but people will be like, what's
wrong
about
with them? My leg extensions that I do every day?
Well, apart from the fact that you're driving the patella into the femur... You know, I tell you what, the best thing to do is to lay down... and then have somebody push on your kneecap and push really hard down and see how it feels. And the problem with that is it bangs against the bone, and then, of course, the bone underneath hurts. You're just like rubbing it together. And what you don't have with it, you've got one bone moving and one bone fixed. So what tends to happen with when you have two bones moving is you have sort of like an opening or an allowance of space between those two bones, which allow joints to move. And when you lock one bone in one position and just move the other, you don't get that dual space. You just get that what we call coupled motion, where the reason there's a reason for the motion happening in that direction.
Yeah.
And so with a leg extension, a classic example is not only do you get a sort of patellofemoral problem, but you also get acceleration issues in that the bone underneath the tibia keeps going upwards and it has no... there's very little contraction from the opposite muscle group to slow it down or to control it. So you also it goes too far, and you get all sorts. I mean, you get all sorts of injuries. Maybe it's a podcast in itself, just explaining why it's a big topic, mate. There's lots of. It'd be nice for Gemma to find some good research on it for us. And
well, yeah, I mean, you said something there in regards to patellofemoral syndromes being caused by leg extensions, whereas the traditional treatment protocols are. Using
doing leg extensions.
Leg extensions to correct the maltracking of the patella to rebalance the quadriceps as to what they perceive as being the causes of patella maltracking.
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe we should take that one day. But for now, let's stay on point. Yeah.
Well, I mean, within that, you alluded to the point of what we're talking about anyway, in a sense of it is not that leg extension is unfunctional, in a sense of we have one bone that is fixed.
Yeah.
And the other bones are moving around a fixed. So that the femur is fixed and the tibia below it is moving around that fixed axis with a patella going with it as well. Whereas if our foot was on the floor and we were going from the bottom of a squat, standing up through that knee extension process, now the femur is moving as well. The femur has the ability to glide at the same time as the tibia, and also not just in a straight in the sagittal plane, it allows for the transverse plane to be present and create that knee space.
Absolutely.
So how is that relevant to what we do? Can we explain that a little bit?
Well, the functional continuum there is exactly that, is that technically, when the functional continuum is a time consuming, it's really all about time and efficiency, is technically you could become a better runner with leg extension. If we wanted to really sort of argue and be nitpicky and argue with each other, we could find evidence or research to say a leg extension will make me a better runner or make me run faster. And where we come from, we would like our exercise and our training time to be as effective and as efficient as possible. So what we'll do is we'll try to find exercises that smell like and look like the sport we're trying to improve or the activity we're trying to improve. And in if we're using running as an example, you know, a lunge looks a lot more like running than a leg extension would. Where step up would be a closer, or a lunge to jump would be a little bit closer. And I think the fitness industry has gone on an awful tangent with functional training. And I mean, there is no such thing as functional training. It doesn't exist. If we wanted to be really pedantic, the only thing functional to running is running.
I think functional training is it's been a buzzword for a while now.
Yeah.
But it is that way of putting things into boxes.
Yeah.
And saying, well, if it's not bodybuilding, it's not isolated joints, then it's functional.
Yeah.
So we are doing compound movements that look something like life. We are functional training. We're picking up heavy objects, we're moving heavy objects, we're doing, squatting, deadlifting. These are life skills, and that is therefore functional. They're the kind of the two boxes that we're just going,
we'll put you in that.
Okay. We'll put you in that or that. So we are functional training, whereas you're just being a bodybuilder and being isolated, even though they do squats and deadlifts.
Yeah.
And but the joys of our exercise is better than your exercise standards.
And so that's it, really. I mean, if you've got these different sports and you've only got 35, 40, 50 minutes, whatever you've got a week, per day to train, you want to try to use your time as efficiently as possible. And the way you can be most efficient with what you're doing is doing exercises that smell, look, and are based around your sport. Is the simplistic way. I mean, we'd go a little bit more complex, where we'll try to manipulate those to activate different muscle groups at different times. The functional continuum says that the only thing functional to what you're trying to improve is what you're trying to improve. So the only thing functional to running is running. You can't sort of closing. We have running, for example, a manipulation of a running variable would be running up and down a hill. That isn't running. If you go into a race in 3 weeks, which is on flats, and you choose to do a hill run today, you're creating a greater demand or a strength element on running by running up and down a hill. That's not functional to running. That's just running. That's just running with a little bit more of a strength element in it. So the functional continuum states of, I've taken a very small step away from what is replicating my sport, and I can come slowly down that continuum and then say, okay, running up hills and maybe yeah, running some different... I mean, even running faster than what I'm planning to do on race day is a change of variable, harder.
Yeah, I think... And that's the missing point, is that we are choosing along this functional continuum to move closer to the sport or further away from it, but understanding exactly why you are choosing that exercise. So you're choosing to run up the hill because you want to have a strength session, make it a little bit more muscular effect on the body rather than it being more momentum based on the flats. Take the stress off the joints, put it onto the muscles. That's a choice in the training, within the training cycle, etc., etc., for that training effect. Whereas, and we can do that with, yeah, come down the continuum and still decide, like what we've said, lunging is more like running. So therefore, it is more functional than a squat. But people will still, all runners do squats to improve their strength for running. It is less functional than a lunge, but it will still have
an effect
yeah, to help benefit, which is what science has proved over time, is our people who are stronger in squatting therefore increase their sporting performance. But what we are saying is, if we can be closer to the sport,
and the I think you apply that to injuries and things, obviously with a physio background is what I tend to apply a lot of things to. But if you have X is what you want to achieve, but you can't achieve that, so you bring it back the minimal amount that you need to in order to be able to complete something. It still looked like the sport that you're aiming for, but allowing that athlete to still continue with training whilst if they're injured or etc.
Well, I think what you talked about there with injuries, Jem, like obviously I've dealt with a fair number of injuries in my time as well, and for me, when we put it into that functional continuum, if I have three athletes with knee pain, one of them plays golf, one of them's a runner, and one of them's a squatter, I have to understand that those functions are different.
Yeah, absolutely.
The stress on the knee, the force on the knee, where the forces are coming from are different. So how can my assessment be the same? Why would I lie them down, flex the knee, and do all the same tests regardless of...
what kind of athlete they
are. What kind of athlete. Maybe I do lie them down because I want to check joint...
yeah, structure, integrity, yeah.
Of course. But ultimately, if it's a pain induced by... Once I've done those tests, yeah, and it's pain induced by movement, I need to understand the function and then go, well...
What it is, what structures that are causing that, or... Yeah, exactly. But it's all about, like exactly like you said, all about trying to manipulate it so it looks more like what they do that would reproduce that symptom, or what they do that would sort of apply to their sport.
I mean, that's a classic example of what you're doing is the painful motion. It's very rarely laying down.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so usually a lot of the time the people will come in and they'll say, it hurts, I have pain in my knee when I run. Okay, do you have pain in your knee when you're asleep? No. Do you have pain in your knee when you're jumping? Yes, I have pain in your jumping. Do you have pain in your knee when you're sitting? No. So you need to see them in their sport and see them in their activities to be able to assess it. And that's, again, the functional continuum is how far down the functional continuum can I come while they've still got pain?
Mm-hmm.
And we reach a point where, okay, they don't have pain here, but they have pain here. And that should be usually a starting point for development of exercises for them and rehabilitation. Yeah.
It was actually, sorry, on that, a really interesting one, because actually I was treating a guy the other day and he told me he couldn't squat without pain or lunge without pain in his knee, and we went through the session and I actually had him lunging with little to no discomfort, little to no pain. Squatting still had pain, but then I stood him on one leg and got him to do a balanced reach, and that had the most amount of pain. So the things that he wants to do in his sport, which are squatting and lunging, are actually was one of the least painful relative something that I ended up finding in my assessment, which then becomes pretty cool because he can still play his sport.
Yeah.
He can still do his sport, but we have to be able to then crack an exercise that looks very little
like his
sport, but that needs to be pain-free because it shouldn't be painful.
Yeah.
So ultimately, that is the sort of short and sweet version of the functional continuum is knowing, as you really nicely said, Chelsea, knowing where you are on the continuum with that exercise you're doing today, knowing what you're trying to get out of that exercise. I think a lot of people, I mean, in my experience, a lot of people, if you go into the gym and you play the why game with them, you say, why are you doing that now? Some people aren't interested in it. They'll just, you know, they just want to follow their program, and whatever's in the program is just what they do, and they want to switch off. That's fine. You know, good luck to them. But there are also the others out there who are inquisitive and they want to know why. And I'd always be asking the question, you know, where am I on that functional continuum and why am I doing this now? That also goes for reps and sets and strength elements and flexibility elements. At the end of the day, your demand, when you're competing, every single joint, every single muscle will have some form of demand placed on it. It will have some kind of flexibility demand, some kind of strength demand, some kind of power demand. It will have some all of these types of things. And so the exercise I'm doing now, how is that helping me towards that? And it's a question that's not asked often enough, if you ask me, in the fitness world. It's a question that's not addressed often enough by coaches. It's sort of, yeah, well, you're just squatting because I told you to squat. It's not an answer from the coach. It should never be an answer. We should know. The functional continuum, yes, is what is the lunge to running if I want to be better at running, or what is the squat to run if I want to be better than running. But there's so many other elements in it. What is the psychological element of it? What is the psychological pressure of the exercise? What time am I doing it? How many reps should I do? How much weight should I have on the bar? All the sort of periodization questions are relevant to the functional continuum, because it should be trying to improve something that you're not good at the moment or would like to be better at. And so, yes, the functional continuum is very short and easy to understand. You know, let's do something that smells like our activity. But for it to smell like the activity, we need to create as much of that activity as possible in our program design. And too much program design is sort of, if one of the guys stops one of my athletes and asks them, why are you doing that? They should be able to answer and say, yeah, well, we're working on this, we're in this phase, and I'd like to make this better. It's a really nice way to be out training, psychological freedom, rather than the, coach says I just need to go and smash it out and get it done today, put myself in the locker. You know, which is the...
Conversely, some athletes are better in that sort of mindset. They don't want to know, they overthink things, they don't want to be completely aware of what it is that they're doing. So I think it's on an individual basis, isn't it? I think
absolutely. And there are some people that just want to get out and train,
and they trust you to just you carry on.
Yeah,
but like what I think you've kind of said there, Phil, is we're talking about the functional continuum in a case of exercise selection.
Yeah.
But then we can then go deeper into a deeper level and go, well, here's the functional continuum on why am I choosing this many reps relative to my function.
Absolutely.
As well. Because we often get, or I know people look at my training and go, oh, that's a lot of reps. And I'm like, well, a lot of reps, but on competition day, guess what? They've got a lot of reps today.
A fair few reps, yeah, exactly.
And they look at my training and go, well, yeah, there's a lot of reps in that training. It's like, but most of the time he's just doing an air squat or a lunge repeatedly with his own body weight. If my athlete is going to break down doing an air squat and lunge after 150 reps, that's a problem for me.
Absolutely.
If I know that his body and his mechanics and his patterns all begin to break down after 150 reps of him moving his body, then over the course of a few weeks of a strength cycle being under load, he's in trouble. He's in big trouble. So that functional continuum goes from exercise selection choice down through reps, sets, rest, energy systems.
Yeah, I think that really is it, is that the problem with program design is people look at the body as fitness, and I know it sounds strange, of course you train to get fitter. But you don't necessarily train to get fitter, and that's really a strange thing to say. I'm going to try and explain it the best I can. But you're trying to improve a skill. You're not trying to get fitter. And there's a big, big difference between that. And you look at the skill element of the sport, and, you know, darts is a skill element. You practice darts, you throw darts, and as you throw darts, you get better at throwing darts. But people would say, well, He's not training. He's not trying to get fitter. He's trying to improve his skill. And to a certain extent, these guys are training. I mean, the triathletes or the cyclists or the CrossFit guys, they're training 600, 700, 800 hours a year. Being in form is nothing to do with it. You're going to be in shape. They're training enough hours. The questions are, what are you getting out of those hours you're in the gym? What are you improving? Because if you're going in there just to get fitter, you're wasting your time because you've got the hours in the bank anyway. So what are you trying to improve today? What are you trying to get better? And just going in and smashing yourself, yes, you'll get some kind of neurological adaption. Yes, you'll get some kind of strength adaption, possibly. Maybe you'll get better at some other things. But it's sort of aimless training, if you like. There should be a clear, dedicated strategy to improving what the weaknesses of the athlete are. And yes, if the athlete's weaknesses are lung capacity on the rowing machine, yeah, well, then you train that, of course. But it's rarely lung capacity. It's rarely aerobic fitness. It's rarely, yeah, some people like some numbers up and be a little bit stronger. But it's mostly technique. It's mostly being able to complete the exercise. It's mostly able to do things right. It's mostly having imbalances. It's mostly having injuries or staying away from injuries, and not enough of the program design focuses on that.
Yeah, I think relative to sport, it's massive. Like back in the day when I played football, there was times where when you're injured, you do more running, more fitness, everything whilst you're injured and coming back in. Then as soon as you go back into the sport specific, you're still a mess.
Yeah.
Because it's just a completely...
You haven't worked through that, yeah.
Completely different feeling. Completely... Yeah. Alien environment. It's not replicating the actual. You can't replicate the event,
and that's what we talked about.
And how it feels.
Hopefully, we're going to talk about is like the environment in which we then train our athletes in, and like the different ways that we can stress them. Maybe it's the wrong word, but different ways that we can stress them so that they can adapt. And again, it look much more specific to their normal football or rugby or whatever else it is, because that doesn't. I mean, sitting and doing leg press in a gym might make your legs that little bit stronger, but how is that applicable to you sitting on a rugby pitch and sort of that explosive power you need there with all the different environmental changes, the team changes, all that sort of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's it, is that what we have a podcast, I think we've planned a podcast on athletes' environment, creating environments for athletes, and that's exactly what we'll be talking about there is how do we make those decisions? And how do we do that? How do we sort of, what's the right way to say it? How do you sort of set them up for success? We talked a lot in other podcasts about setting them up for success, but we're going to talk in that podcast a lot about the creating that environment for people. So that's the functional continuum. Anything else you guys would like to add?
How can we apply that to the people that are listening? What else can we do? What would you recommend them?
As in taking this
forward
now.
For them.
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. It's probably one that's difficult to answer, which is what makes it a good question, I guess. the thing is it's always to be aware of what you're trying to get out of what you're doing. And thinking to yourself, what am I trying to improve with what I'm doing now? Am I taking a step closer to that? I think actually it's a really good point, is that if you're not improving something, you're making something worse. There isn't any middle ground there. And then there's a lot of people who are training. Every time you train to improve something. So if you're improving something that's bad, you're getting worse. So, I mean, the classic example is two-legged squats. A two-legged squat would be the old example of what is a progression, a one-legged squat or a two-legged squat. Is a two-legged squat a progression of one-leg squat, or is a one-leg squat a progression of a two-leg squat? And that's to say, well, if my squat is skew-whiff and I'm sort of all over the place, then a one-leg squat is where you'd start to go up to a two-leg squat. But if a two-leg squat, you was really smooth and really good, you might want to go up to a one-leg squat. So the answer is both. And that's really cool. And that's how you would use the functional continuum, is to say, well, am I improving something here, or am I improving something that's worse?
Yeah, am I making something worse by repeating the same thing?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Am I getting better at being worse? Yeah. And so if you are improving something, well, then you're using the functional continuum, because you're doing something. And again, the next question is then, well, how far away from, could I do it in a better way? That's all we're really talking about. Is there a better way? Is there a better way to be more efficient? Can I do something that smells just like what I'm trying to produce on match day or game day or race day or competition day? How far away from that do I need to come to create an adaptation to what I'm doing without going too far away from it?
It's seen a lot in the fitness industry and in strength and conditioning, where their most important factor is being able to shift load.
Yeah.
The more load that they can put through the body, the more they can stimulate. More load equals more overload, equals more adaptation, equals more strength.
Yeah.
So then you get people going in that argument of, oh yeah, well, this exercise, the counter argument of what we're talking about, and saying, well, all right, standing on one leg, doing a med ball rotation for golf, oh, that looks really sexy, but I'm going to create more force and more load doing a squat, therefore that's a better exercise and you need to be able to do that.
But they're not creating more load with the squat, and that's the big misconception, is you're creating demand on the system. And the question is how many repetitions can you do at that particular weight or particular stress level? So let's just say I can put 100 kilos on my back and I could do 4 squats. I probably couldn't, but let's just say I could. Put 100 kilos on my back and do 4 squats. And then stand, if you asked me to do a pistol, I could get down and I'd stay down. You know, I'm not coming up. I'm not coming up from a single leg squat. So what is harder? You're talking about, okay, we're putting load and demand through my system. 100 kilos 4 times is easier for me than a one-legged squat all the way down and all the way back up. I couldn't do it. So what's harder? What's greater load? The one-legged squat, it doesn't matter how much weight I've got on my back. The weight I'm pushing is totally irrelevant. What is relevant is how much demand am I creating on the system. And we can use angles. You know, we can be really clever with the angle at which we do exercises, which creates incredible amounts of stress on the system without any weight on the back. The nervous system hasn't got the ability to... The nervous system just knows I need to overcome what's in front of me now, and what's in front of me is bloody hard. So now I need to do something.
I think on using the functional continuum, it's like, I don't get good at golf by playing cricket.
No. No, you slice. It's called a cricketer's slice.
So it's one of those of like, why would I not do something that looks like a sport? I mean, my example with golf is, I've been lucky to work with a golf coach with just an amateur golfer, and literally all I looked at with him was that ability of his spine to move through the motions that it needs to move through for golf.
Yeah.
And the issue that he had, or that the golf coach sent him to me with, was the fact that his wrist was coming through before his elbow on his golf swing. My golf knowledge is fairly poor, but that's why the golf coach was there. I was basically asking him, what position does he need to be in?
Yeah.
You tell me,
yeah,
and I'll assess why his body cannot kind of do that. So I basically found out there was nothing wrong with his shoulder, because they thought it was a shoulder restriction, and his spine was just not moving through the functions that it should do. So then the program, I think we did 3 sessions over a 6-8 month period. He didn't play golf in that time due to work commitments and things like that. Went back to his golf coach, who was then like, what have you been doing? His swing was, he was hitting further with his 9 than he could with his 7, and he needed a whole new set of golf clubs. So I cost him an awful lot of money. His performance had gone up. So his ability to strike a golf club without any, like, with the most simplest exercises effectively in the world, no load, no weight, just mobilising the spine to learn the task that it needed to do for that sport. And that's the game.
Yeah.
That's the game. That's Which is the then game. The argument of, like, you go into golf and go, oh, well, let's get somebody throwing a med ball around. It's like, yes, that exercise looks like golf, but are you assessing whether the spine is doing what it's supposed to do? Or are you just giving them an exercise that looks like golf and not giving it the attention?
Which potentially is just reinforcing the patterns that they've got already, but added load to it, and therefore makes them worse. Host of things, yeah.
Which is where your injuries come from.
Yeah, exactly. Which is where they end up with,
Which is where instead of on the trainer's doorstep, they're on the physio's doorstep because they're,
And then that once they get to our doorstep, or a lot of them, is once something's broken down, there's some sort of soft tissue is broken down, or something is not quite working as well as it should be because of this. And that's where the symptoms come in, as opposed to the cause of it. And like you said before, you were thinking of sort of they originally thought might be a shoulder, but actually when you were assessing it was a spine. It's trying to stop it getting to that point.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was a small half an hour. Do you like that? Small half an hour. What's a small...
Not just half an hour.
Not just half an hour, small half
big
an hour.
Yeah.
Big half an hour, big 45 minutes.
Quick half an hour.
Yeah. On the functional continuum, again, we hope you enjoyed it. We
it
did.
It is true, though. Like, if you're in a bad situation in sport, it feels like a long 5 minutes.
Yeah, it does.
But if
it
it's going really well, it's a quick 5 minutes.
Absolutely. But it's still 5 minutes.
It's still 5 minutes. So this was felt like a quick.
It did. It flew 30 minutes
to us.
Yeah.
You might be bored, and it might feel like a slow 30 minutes.
Shot in the dark. Sleep therapy podcast series.
At least we'll have a function for something.
Yeah, we've got a function for people sleeping.
Yeah. We might cure. Yeah, sleep.
Yeah. Get well soon, team.